morning, everyone. Nice to have you here for Wednesday, February 3rd meeting of the Metropolitan Planning Organization Technical Advisory Committee meeting to order. It is about 7 minutes after 9:00. And can we have a roll call, please?
Steve Brom?
Here.
Moses M. Oter?
Here.
Hershey Mahaven?
Yes.
Douglas Hess?
Here.
Ryan Collins? Barry Allen? Tara Baker is excused. Charles Frazier?
One answer for Charles Frazier.
Alex Hansen?
Here.
Jeff Levenworth?
Here.
Kenny Wilson? Angela Usher?
Here.
Ingrid Allen?
Tamash Graham applying for Ingrid Allen.
Terrence Bailey?
Here.
Thomas Driscoll? Thomas Driscoll is excused, I'm sorry. William Frost? Kim Delaney?
Here.
Natalie Crowley?
Don Sonthorn, the grad.
Thomas Lanahan?
Here.
Jamie Brown?
Felipe LaPasta, for Jamie Brown.
Richard Reed?
Here.
Christopher Marsh?
Here.
You have a call, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. You have your agenda for today's meeting. We need to do a motion to adopt the agenda as submitted.
Move.
Second. Motion and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? What would happen if it failed? You also have the minutes from December 2nd, so you've unusually had 60 days to read them, which means Alex had more time.
So you want me to make a motion?
Yes, we do.
Is that it, you? Okay, motion to approve the minutes of the December 2nd meeting.
I second.
And a second, any other discussion on the minutes? All right, all in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Very good. Thank you, Alex. We know that when you make the motion that the minutes are right, so that means. Everyone other than Alex still should read them, correct. I have no other comments other than welcome to the first meeting for the 2016 version of our Technical Advisory Committee. And you'll note we still do not have an omelet station set up. That's my only comment.
All right. Thank you all for being here this morning. And Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present to the group. A few remarks for my executive director's report today. First, I want to highlight a couple of MPO events that recently occurred. The MPO board did do its second annual rolling retreat with the Northern Palm Beach County focus. That was on January 21st, and I wanted to recognize and say I just appreciate the efforts of all of our agency partners, the cities, the transit entities, the regional planning council, who contributed to make that event a success. We're very pleased with the way it went. I also wanted to point out the MPO conducted an application workshop on January 28th for both of our transportation alternatives and local initiatives application process, helping all of our agency partners that might be considering applications understand what's required of them. If you missed it, all of the information that was covered in that workshop is available on our website, and wanted to remind everyone those applications are due to the MPO via online submittal, paperless electronic submittal, by April 1st. A couple of items on the personnel side for us. Wanted to let everyone know that Seth Contreras, who was our long-range transportation plan coordinator, did resign in January. He took a position with the Las Vegas MPO in order to relocate a little bit closer to home. He was from California. So we're sad to see him go, but excited for his opportunities there.
Should we visit him?
And as that goes, we are in the market for a new senior planner to assume those responsibilities. That position's been advertised on our website, so if you know anyone who may be interested in a career with the MPO, please direct them to our website where they can fill out that application. Also pleased to welcome Sandra Feliciano. Sandra is sitting in the back of the room. Sandra is our new fiscal specialist for the MPO, and she's going to be helping us out with the grants that we submit to the DOT to be reimbursed through our Federal Highway and Transit Administration, as well as handling all of our contracts with our consultants doing support work for the MPO and our planning activities. A few project updates, just two, and talk about in greater detail this morning. His first one is Indian Town Road. If those of you who live in northern Palm Beach County, Indian Town Road will be closed between the Beeline Highway and Seminole Pratt Whitney Road from February 15th through the end of March. That's construction activity associated with the widening of Beeline Highway, and that segment of Indian Town Road is going to be closed, so you'll have to divert around that if you find yourself traveling up in that area. Second, we are having the DOT and their consultant team is having a project development environmental kickoff meeting for the US 1 Bridge project in Jupiter. That meeting is later this month, and the details are actually part of an agenda item for your information later in the meeting. A couple of land use activities that I want to highlight for you and your general awareness in case you missed the newspaper. The Palm Beach Gardens Council on January 6th did approve transmittal to the Department of Economic Opportunity a land use amendment for the Avenue project at a reduced scale in Don Curry, but I think the reduced scale was right around 3,000 residential units.
3,000 single family and 250
multi. Yes, that's what I recall. So 3,250 overall for residential intensity, or density, I always use those.
Density.
Yeah, residential density number, and then the non-residential proposal was unaffected by the council's action.
Actually, the office went up to 1,940,000, it was 1,008,000.
Yeah.
So that went slightly.
Also want to highlight on January 26th, just earlier, just last week, the County Commission approved transmittal to the Department of Economic Opportunity land use amendments for an economic development center on Southern Boulevard at the PBA Holdings property that's west of Seminole Pratt Road by about, Seminole Pratt Whitney Road by about 3 miles. So that's an interesting decision that the County Commission made, as well as allowing at least transmittal of commercial uses on several select parcels within the agricultural reserve as privately initiated amendments. As a note on the land use amendments, I wanted to mention it's our goal in the MPO to capture and accurately forecast demand associated with all of our land use designations in our local government's comprehensive plans. So if any activity is occurring within your jurisdiction, within your city council is taking action on something, please, if you think of it, take a minute to shoot us a note or call us, or even under the member comments when you attend these meetings, make that an interactive discussion so that you bring those items to our attention, and we can make sure that we accurately capture that information and forecast the changes in demand associated with different activities by our local governments. Last item I just wanted to mention is we've been peripheral to the conversation regarding the development of an infrastructure backlog list of projects that might be used to, in concert with the county's intent or potential intent to pursue a sales tax to support infrastructure deficiencies. The municipalities have all been requested to provide input into that process to give a list of potential infrastructure deficiencies to Richard Radcliffe at the League of Cities. And just wanted the group to know that Richard and I have been in conversation about the MPO potentially assisting them with collecting and standardizing the format of that information so that we could maybe help in the administration of that. And that would be useful for us, especially with respect to the transportation facilities that are part of your infrastructure backlog, because those are potential projects that could be funded through the MPO and maintenance obligations that may be used in addition to maintaining our system, but an opportunity to improve the system. So even if you're going to be spending maintenance money on a corridor or a project, maybe there's an opportunity for you to seek MPO funds to augment your scope of work and maybe make the corridor a little better while you're out there resurfacing it.
Can I ask
like
a quick question since
please
you
do.
Referenced that a number of communities have submitted their lists in a different format. I was sent yesterday the Excel format. Are we to resubmit it in the new format, or are you guys going to be?
Let me get an answer from Richard on that. But yeah, as of right now, he's still the contact that you should be interacting with.
But you interjected yourself into it.
We are peripherally involved in the conversation. We haven't been formally engaged at this point.
But what if we just want to work with you?
Well, you can send the list to me too, and I'll take a look at it. It'll probably end up on my desk.
Yes, Nick, just one quick suggestion on the notification of the comprehensive plan amendment. Maybe there's already the IPART process, the Intergovernmental Plan Amendment Review Committee, which not every municipality is part of, but most are, which is coordinated by Anna Yeski, and she actually distributes. So just get on the distribution list, and that would probably address your need for the most part. I mean, not everyone is validated, but most of the large
ones. All the ones that are going to have
the change at
the
MPO
scale are going to,
yeah.
That's a good idea.
Good idea. Mr. Chair, that's all I have for the report this morning. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank you very much. The next section on the agenda is general comments from the public. We don't have any cards. I think the cards are there. But if you have any comments from the public on anything that's not on the agenda, then now's the time to do that. We have passed football season, so we'll take no more comments on football games as we've done in the past.
It is National Signing Day.
Yes, it is. Okay.
No wonder he's in that
game. It's a good thing you did say it. Any comments the public may have on action items will be considered after the item has been presented. The first action item is a motion to recommend approval of amendments to the LRTP. Three specific amendments and turn over to that.
Yes, we have as background to this item, all of you, I believe, are aware that the MPO is required to undergo federal certification review every 4 years. If you're not aware, previous to me saying that, now you are. And the most recent MPO certification occurred in 2015. Representatives from the Federal Highway came down, as well as the Federal Transit Administration, to review our practices, identify what they believe are noteworthy practices, corrective actions, things that we did either fail to do or did really wrong and need to change, and recommendations of practice going forward. So I've excerpted the report for you in the backup material, and I wanted to briefly highlight some of the noteworthy practices because I think they're worth a brief moment of discussion on, and then I'm going to talk you through the corrective actions and the amendment that we were asking your recommendation of approval for that addresses those corrective actions. So first, just as a general awareness, wanted to remind everyone that we did receive a federal highway grant to purchase bicycle and pedestrian count devices. The pedestrian counts are probably the more technologically exciting piece of infrastructure that we purchased because they are they use thermal imagery to determine when a person walks by. So we're very interested. We started counting in November, and we're very interested to see how well those counters behave in the summertime in Florida when the ambient air temperature starts to approximate human body temperature. So we're going to watch that carefully and see if that was a good idea or if those are not useful. But
were they costing?
About 2,000.
2,000 to 3,000 a piece?
Yes.
That's not bad.
Yeah. And then the bike counters are a little more typical. They're just pneumatic tubes, air tubes across the bike to capture a puff of air when bicycles roll across.
So that's across the bicycle facility?
Across the bike.
So if somebody's on the sidewalk, it's not going to capture that?
We do have selective tubes, so we can capture both people who bike across the sidewalk. We just don't know about the trip hazards.
So just so everyone knows, Fran Taylor is our bike ped coordinator who's answering these questions from the back of the room, and our resident expert. We just want to make sure we put that face and name together. And they also highlighted our participation in the Mayor's Challenge, the exercise nationally to promote safer streets for all users, and our development of a policy regarding complete streets for Palm Beach County. On the transit side, I thought this was interesting. For those of you who are not aware that this occurs, the county does receive about $45 million a year in local option gas tax. I'm not sure that this was a commendation worthy of identification in an MPO review, because this wasn't an MPO decision to spend the money this way. But they did say great job to the county commission for allocating 70% of their local gas tax to PalmTran operating costs. So if you were unaware that is occurring today, I'm just highlighting for your awareness that of the $45 million received by the county, $32 million gets allocated to Palm Canada to defray some of their operating costs.
And so that's
sales tax. That's an interesting observation. we'll go on to the next one.
George, I'm here to say
something. Well, I think that MPO's long-range budget also for 2040. have about 60% for transit for it. Is that roughly?
I'm not sure.
But it's kind of like that. Okay.
I think it depends on. I don't know the percentage. It depends on whether you're considering overall investment in operations and maintenance of your existing service and capital projects, or whether you're only looking at the capital investment component of the plan.
I thought there was a hard
percentages are different. So two others, the next two, the UPWP is something, and I want to briefly mention this. We did send out a notice to all of the city managers asking for project planning project suggestions for the MPO. The UPWP is basically our budget and task list. It tells us what we're supposed to work on and how much money we get to spend on those tasks over the next 2 years. And so we're looking for input from each of you and your member and your representative agencies on things that we should focus our attention on as we go forward. And they like the way we organized and presented that to the public. And then our public participation, the summary I think is, as an MPO, instead of the traditional approach to public engagement where we hold a workshop and ask people to come and tell us what they think, what we're trying to do as an agency is go where people already are and get their input while they're doing life. So neighborhood associations, coalitions, the Fair, Sunfest are all venues that we would seek to collect input in the public.
It's
not a bad suggestion. And then they did highlight our role retreat and the ability that we, or our, I guess, initiative in taking that on. And then the last one was the way that we presented information in our long-range plan. They thought that we did a decent job of making that a little bit more readable and understandable, from revenue to project development to cost-feasible planning and whatnot. And then they liked the emphasis that we placed on how expensive it is to operate and maintain the components of our system, as opposed to just sort of tossing that information into an appendix and saying, yeah, if you care, go read it. So just wanted to highlight those for you, because we're proud of them, and we were glad to be recognized for at least several of those. So corrective actions, there were three. The first one, I'm just going to read the highlighted text for you. The MPO needs to modify our long-range plan to include a narrative regarding potential environmental mitigation activities that have been developed in consultation with regulatory agencies. And then they gave us a deadline for completion. So the amendment in the backup material has been reviewed by the Federal Highway Administration staff that gave us this corrective action, and they believe that our proposed amendment fully resolves this issue. So I want you to be aware. I'm still interested in your feedback if you have any further refinements or improvements to that. But I want you to be aware that we have been in collaboration with Federal Highway, and they're ready to say what you're doing is what we intended for you to do, and we're going to sign off. If you scroll down, Andy, to the highlight, right there. For number two, we need to modify our long-range cost-feasible plan tables to include project detail. And what they mean by project detail is we have to show which phases are intended to be accomplished in which time period. This is interesting because it's a planning document, and it's sort of envisioning out into the future what may be. And we had done this by sort of saying, okay, we think check boxes to show that a project is going to occur over 5-year bands or 10-year bands are sufficient. We'll figure out which phases happen in which bands when we get there. They said, no, you need to be a little more specific. So what we've done in our long-range plan is, instead of check boxes, we've replaced them with letters to indicate that the first check means that we're doing design, project development and design activities. The second checkbox means we're acquiring right-of-way. So that's an R,
versus
so we've got a PE, R, and then a construction. So, yeah.
So there's no change.
What other order would
that be? No, we didn't change. Yeah, right. So, and we had the backup in an appendix. They said it needed to be a little more explicitly shown. So this was kind of a Scrivener's issue, but we've addressed this concern. And then the last one, which they raised, was that we have to revise the long-range plan to clearly demonstrate fiscal constraint. And it says through the entire plan, but what they meant by the comment was in the first 5 years. So the approach that we had taken in our long-range plan was, we've got a tip that tells you where we're spending money over the first 5 years, and we're going to do a plan for years 6 through 25. They said, you need to show us in the long-range plan what you show us in the tip and make it a little more clear. So that's what we did. I will say, in hindsight, and we've talked a little bit about revenue forecasts and cost feasibility in this committee, if we had done this in the initial round, I probably would have caught the difference between funding levels in the TIF and revenue forecasted funding levels, and maybe we would have done our plan a little differently. So in hindsight, I wish we would have done this up front, but they just said, make sure you show it so we understand how much money you're spending in the first 5 years and how much you anticipate to spend in year 6 through 25. And that's what we've done in the amendment.
I saw you added that number, like if it is 200 million in the next 5 years, you added that to the ultimate 2040.
That's correct.
Does it reduce our 2040, but you know, the feasibility in terms of cost?
In that regard, not at all. Because the totals that we have put in our financial summary were totals for year 6 through 25. So all we did was add money to reflect the first 5 years, and then we used that money to build the projects in the TIF over that first 5 year period. So it was a cost neutral amendment. Mr. Chair, I'm not going to go through the details of the amendment because I think the comments were pretty self-explanatory, and I've already mentioned that Federal Highway has agreed with the approach that we're taking, but if anyone has any particular questions, we'd be happy to talk our way through them with you.
Well, I think, sir, you gave a very good overview of the impacts. I think it's as much of housekeeping. Do you have any questions or comments?
Just to Nick's point, we have followed up with the advice of the right, and they all are ready to change it.
She's okay with it. And what's interesting about this is the guidance to prepare the long-range plan has been out, I believe, since 2012, and it depends on who's reviewing it. So these corrective actions, actually other NPOs got them too, so it depends on who's reviewing it at the federal level. But anyway, it looks good, and according to the Federal Highway, I think I'm fine.
I make a motion to recommend approval of the proposed amendments to the 2040 long range transportation.
We have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
Second. Any additional discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries unanimously. We'll go from action items to information items, which means I guess many of us are done thinking. Just joking. We've got some good information items on the agenda today, so I look forward to hearing.
All right, Mr. Chair, I'm going to introduce Vicki Katanis and also Barbara Handerhan is here from SFRTA, and they are going to provide this update to the committee members.
Good morning. I'm Vicki Katanis, transportation planner for SFRTA. I'm going to give a brief overview of the agency, and then Barbara will focus on Palm Beach Challenge projects and then the NPO program. So the service began in 1989, January. It's been in service about 27 years now. Double tracking in 2006 greatly improved efficiency of the system. We carry an average of about 15,000 passengers a day for approximately 77 WPD. In terms of modernization efforts, we have notably rejoined the Pompano Station. That's a green pilot project. We expect to go for a LEED Gold certification on that. That's currently going on now, as well as our new operations center at Pompano Station. Additionally, this is a picture of our Miami station at the International Airport. That opened last year as well. Our system is a 72-mile system with 18 stations. The 18th station was added last year at Miami, Miami Airport. And that gives us connections to transit connections to all three regional international airports now. These are some of our major markets. I guess every place you want to have connections to. We have primarily choice riders. So these are people who do have cars, they choose to ride the train instead. Still a third are transit dependent, which means they do not have any other means of transportation. This shows our ridership. We had a gradual increase from 2010 to 2014. Our ridership should be second to 2014. As you may know, we assumed dispatch and maintenance over the system last year. We had a few hiccups and ridership did drop. We addressed those and ridership has really been picking up since then. Our shuttle bus service.
Maybe can ask you a quick question.
Maybe.
The choice ridership percentage, it caught my attention. Do you have any idea how students are categorized? Are they considered choice riders or transit-dependent population?
It's a good question, and I'll have to take it back.
Just curious.
And I should say, too, you all know Joe Quinty. We're kind of standing in for him today. So if you want to have a fuller, this presentation actually has a lot of extra information, and Joe's always happy to share that. So we do partner with cities for and other agencies, DDAs, CRAs, for our shuttle bus program. It's very popular in Palm Beach County. We have shuttle service at Lake Worth and Boca. And the new PBIA shuttle, which goes from our West Palm station to the airport. It's a 10-minute ride. It started in October. It's been very successful. It's a well-liked. We have a ridership of about 5.5 riders per hour, and our target is 7. So over 3 months, we've achieved that.
Sorry if I can just jump in. There's also, again, a trolley route, a city trolley route that goes to the West Palm Beach Seaboard Station. It's heavily used. Maybe it's only 140,000 passengers a year. And again, the main purpose of that is to connect the multimodal transit facility there, which includes the tribal station, to different points in downtown West Palm Beach. So just to point that out.
Thank you. We expanded our bike capacity. We have 10 cars that are dedicated bike cars. These are on our busiest our busiest trains, and they have first floor access. 18 bike parking stations per car. We also recently, last year, we completed improvements to the West Palm Beach station, and that included adding bike lockers. Surprisingly, very popular. We have been fully subscribed. Onboard Wi-Fi was implemented. Finally, we have onboard Wi-Fi. And we are currently beta testing a real-time passenger information system. So you will have a smartphone app, and that's being tested. We're optimistic for the spring of 2016. We're being safe to say summer. And a second phase will include LED boards at all of our stations.
Excuse me, Nikki?
Yes.
For the real-time information, is that trains only right now, or will it move to shuttles as well?
Good question again.
Currently it's for trains only, but then to expand our phases into the shuttles as well.
Perfect.
The app will include the shuttles. If you download the Tri-Rail app, it'll show shuttle schedules and options.
Currently we're just the train, but then, like I said, the next phase would be to go into the shuttles.
And now I'll turn it over to Barbara.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Barbara Handringham with South Florida Regional Transportation Authority. I see some familiar faces here from my previous life. That's nice. We're here today. My primary work at SFRTA on capital planning projects. And a big part of my job is working with the MPO and the Federal Transit Administration and Department of Transportation and bringing the funding in so that we can move forward and make progress on the
partnership with the MPO and DOT, we're greatly appreciative of these projects. Our northern layover maintenance facility, a lot of discussion on the new Boca station, some recent study money that's coming up for the PBI station study. And I'll talk a little bit about the Coastal Link and our West Palm to Jupiter extension, what's going on there. Like Vicki said, Joe is our champion, and I see him here today, who's also a champion for the Coastal Link. So I'll do my best to provide you with an update. Our SFRTA Palm Beach County projects, they are prioritized and funded in partnership with the Palm Beach MPO and the DOT and the Florida Department of Transportation. These projects are consistent with the overall vision that's identified in the Palm Beach LRTP 2040 Cost Feasible Plan, the Palm Beach MPO TIP, the FDOT Work Program, and SFRTA's Transit Development Plan. The first project we'll talk about here is our new northern layover maintenance facility and where we're at and what's going on. This is a project has estimated cost of $36.15 million, funded primarily by the Palm Beach MPO. Our project is to identify a new layover maintenance facility that would move us out of our downtown West Palm area and move us into the vicinity. And as you can see, we have a couple of jurisdictions here. We have West Palm, City of West Palm Beach, City of Riviera Beach, and Town of Mangonia Park. I'm gonna make sure I didn't forget it. We've also recently acquired some land from the Port of Palm Beach in order to finalize moving forward with the project. So we're in the planning and development phase of the northern layover that will improve efficiency and current tribal operations and facilitate future system enhancement and expansion. The project will be located on about a half a mile north of our Mangonia station, which you can see here, and at our mission spur, which is starting here. So our scope of work here is to build a new layover maintenance facility that will provide midday and overnight train storage. Certainly a team of consultants will develop a 30% design of the facility, and we're planning to prepare a design build finance package for the project. As you can see, we have a significant amount of funding that does stretch out over a couple of fiscal years for us. So we have hired a consultant, we've completed a scope, and they are starting to work on preparation of that design build finance package for us so that we can go out for construction and build the project sooner. And that would be the intent. The estimated RFP package to select the contractor should be completed by the end of this year, this calendar year, December 2016. And the construction of the facility will probably be within 2 years after the contract is awarded. This project will also help to facilitate the plans to expand and enhance the system from Jupiter to downtown Miami, our tribal coastal link project as well. And then we move into our new Boca station. A second tribal station for Boca Raton has been discussed for many years. We're looking at an additional station in the vicinity of Glades Road and Military Trail, and it would allow for thousands of jobs at a regional destination. Currently, we've selected a consultant, actually had a kickoff meeting yesterday with that consultant to start an operational analysis. It'll be important for us to do an operational analysis on the impacts of our existing system by adding another station. So we're gonna be collecting data and also data on ridership. Since Boca Yamada Road Station is our highest ridership for our system, we want to be sure how this station may impact that station. Or are we going to drive new riders in? Is it going to be as good? Or understanding the cost as well to the system. So the cost estimates for the project are at preliminary planning. We've done some preliminary cost estimates, and we'll be know that we're probably going to need some right-of-way. We don't have a cost on that yet because we are going to be moving into the PD&E phase, our federal NEPA document. We do know that because of the location that it could potentially be at, that we'll have limited parking and that we should be looking for some long-term shuttle bus funding agreement in order to shuttle people from the station to the surrounding economic areas. So like I said, our first phase is to do the operational analysis, and our second phase is to go into our project development and environment phase, and we anticipate that beginning in July of this year. And as we move through that phase, we'll determine what type of environmental document is needed in order to determine a full schedule on the project. But we do have some funding that is coming up, and we're working with the MPO and the Department of Transportation to lay out that schedule for the overall project. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have funding coming up in fiscal year 17-18 for the Palm Beach International Airport Tribal Shuttle, I mean, Tribal Station Study. This is different, and that's what Vicki had talked about before. We do have a shuttle going from West Palm Beach, in addition to a lot of other shuttles from the city of West Palm Beach. But we are looking for a need to improve connectivity to and from the airport from our station. So we'll be taking the same approach and starting with an operational analysis, just like we would with the Boca station, to see what type of impacts this may or may not have. And with funds available in July of 17, and the MPO funding that study for us, so we do plan on starting on that soon. And then we'll talk about our projects of regional significance that we're working on. And like I said, we're very excited. There's a lot going on with Tri-Rail. And I guess I just want to, everyone's heard of the Tri-Rail Coastal Link. You've seen presentations? Okay. So as he said, currently our system is 72 miles with the full Tri-Rail Coastal Link from Miami to Jupiter, from downtown Miami to Jupiter, with the 80 plus miles of new commuter rail service on the FEC. We'd be looking at 20 to 25 new stations linking dozens of municipalities. We would share existing tracks with the FEC, the Florida East Coast Rail, and also with the South Florida Regional Corridor. We'd be working with Olivet, Florida, and kind of currently just on the map, just understanding that we'd be looking, our current corridor goes red and blue, where we're running now, and then the proposed Tribal Coastal Link would be running with the green and the red, but also the red with us crossing over. So if you look at the coastal link, there's a Tiger Northward Tiger connection that is currently being designed with the Department of Transportation. And then we have an IRIS connection in Miami, which is what we're working on at SLRTA now, where Joe is today in downtown Miami, having more discussions about allowing us to run into the downtown onboard station. And then there is some funding on the Pompano Beach connection, which is the more expensive connection of the project that would allow us to make that crossover into Broward. So there's a lot going on here, a lot of pieces from the project as a whole.
Question for you, Barbara?
Sure.
On the Pompano connection, is there funding? You said there's funding on the Pompano connection. Is that being carried in the Broward MTO budget? Or?
It's being carried in the Broward MTO budget, and it's just a small piece of funding to do some acquisition, some beginning acquisition, but that's all the funding that's there currently. But with that, once you get it in there, then it's how does it develop, how does it grow? So that's where that is now.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And so with the Coastal Link, the project development phase is being led by the Florida Department of Transportation. The next step would be to actually go into project development for the overall project. But keeping that in mind, we are looking at phasing the project as well. The overall project is about $800 million, and so it's difficult to approve all the financing for a project of that magnitude at once. So by phasing the project, partnering with other agencies, we're going to have more success in doing that. And then in Palm Beach, we're here to talk about our Traveler Jupiter extension. Obviously, like I said, we're having some negotiations and talks with Miami. There's still a gap in funding that we're trying to close on that, but it looks like that's going to be worked out. Jupiter and Northern Extension would be the next logical step for us. There is some funding in the STEP and the STEP to start those studies. We would be looking to start the study and have those conversations about actually going from once this northward connection is completed, taking our trains to Jupiter. So the northward connection is scheduled for completion at the end of 2018. And again, as phasing it, we'd be looking at about $75 million to do that phase of the project as well. Certainly have strong support with our partners and the NPO. And like I said, there is a small portion of funding in the TIP and STIP, and as well as the project is included in the NPO's 2040 long range plan. And so taking a look at what we've been having going on along the corridor and thankful to all the support that we're getting here in Palm Beach County. As you can see, the green is funding that's in the NPO long range plan. And we've kind of put the dates and the time frames that we anticipate some of these will move up. Some will be sooner rather than later. And then as you can see, our new Northern Layover Maintenance Facility is funded. The new Boca Town Center or Boca Station is funded. And then the red, which is our future Tribal Coastal Link, which is the whole project, is there as well. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
I have a question. Your layover facility, does that replace the storage area next to Tamarind Street in downtown West Falls?
Currently, there's not been a final decision on whether it's going to replace it. We certainly know that it will minimize any train storage there, but currently they haven't made a decision to fully replace the West Palm station.
Barbara, has a general location decision been made on the potential of Palm Beach International Station? And I know I heard some time ago, probably will be somewhere near Southern Boulevard, and I know the study that you're proposing would address some of those specific details, but still, is it going to be, that is the general area that the study is going to look at, or has our other locations still being evaluated,
right,
or will be evaluated?
What's happened is there's some studies we've done previously in the past, so we have to kind of revisit those to see if it's still feasible. The area that you mentioned, yes, that's correct. I believe it was a county-owned property that we were looking at, so we'd certainly be looking at that. We'd be looking at, is that still feasible, or is there something else in the vicinity that might be an option as well?
Barbara, I'll ask. On the Jupiter extension, maybe if you could go back to
sure.
That slide. So you've identified an estimated capital cost, and I guess the question I have is, what steps do you think need to happen and by whom to get into the next activity for that project?
Well,
so, analysis of operating costs, need and revenue necessary, refinement of station locations, DOT funding, MPO prioritization. I'm trying to gauge so that we can help our elected officials understand where do they go
sure,
from here
absolutely.
To make this move forward.
Right, and it would, you know, it's certainly going to be similar to where we are with the Miami Link. It's taking a look at the timing and working with the department, because that's part of the project development and starting the study. There's been a lot of work that's already been done. And so you want to engage those partners. Who are the municipalities that we need to be talking to? Who do we need to be presenting to say, you know, are we in a position to get this started and to start to really move forward? And certainly getting commitments. The biggest thing has been getting funding commitments. We tend to see that once the funding's in place, we're able to move forward with the project working.
Thank you.
on the stations or potential stations associated with that. We're showing there five locations, the two bigger Amish gardens, Lake Park and Vera Beach, and then West Palm Beach, St. Mary's. I guess my question is, has a final determination been made that at least for phase one, there will be five stations? I'm asking specifically because what I heard some time ago is that at least for Lake Park, Riviera Beach, and the northern West Palm that you live there, because they could be too close to each other, that chances are there'll be one or two and not all three.
Correct.
So is that, so it's an either or?
It's an either or, and my understanding from the analysis that's been done before, we actually looked at the potential for 11 stops that could go between here, but it would certainly narrow down. And so this is what it's potentially narrowed down just based on some preliminary analysis. But yes, the question between Lake Park and the others will be how close they are and what that, if they meet that criteria to have a station, or whether we need to maybe centrally locate it so that it benefits both cities.
Well, can everyone read the note in the gray bubble? Mm-hmm. It's kind of DOT fashion, that the smaller the text, the more important the content.
$75 million number, or some number less than $75 million, if you only get three stations.
The cost for the $75 million is not all in the stations. I mean, there's a significant amount of cost in the station. And I guess I want to understand your question.
Well, it says an interim something about three stations instead of the five that are shown there, mm-hmm. but the estimate is $75 million. So, is it $75 million for the interim with only three stations, or
can you build three stations for 75, or can you build five stations?
And that's a good question. I'll have to get back to that.
Well, the Boca Town Center cost estimate was just under 20, right?
Correct.
It was like 19 million.
Yes.
So figure three stations is going to be about 60, four stations, you know, is closer to 80. So what we know in our prior discussions with Tri-Rail is that for a northern extension to happen, it must include a Palm Beach Garden station. Right? That's the key station for the extension that makes the service feasible otherwise, and then the other stations have a varying degree of ridership. So, with working with the MPO, the council has worked with all the local governments, and we have station locations that have been preliminarily identified. The local governments, though, haven't, aside from West Palm, I think the other four local governments haven't begun to embed those recommendations as extensively in comp plans and land development regulations as will ultimately be necessary. So, if there are next steps as we think about that, one of the pieces is going to be local government activity to kind of advance those station locations with the regulatory language necessary to make them, to show the evidence that there's a commitment for that, and then what becomes the land use pattern that supports them. So that's just kind of food for thought as we think about work program.
Thank you very much.
So right now we're anticipating all the stations in the north end costing $20 million, because I vaguely remember 2 to 3 million being a number thrown around years ago that each municipality had to pony up to basically get a station. So I'm surprised it went from 2 to 3 million to 20.
I'm just suggesting we saw 19 as the cost associated as a Boca station. That might be reflective of higher land values.
There's
a lot of fluff on that, I'm
assuming. And you have to look at the parking and what they do. So each station is going to have each individual footprint.
Then I guess a question for you, Nick, is in any of the potential funding sources that the MPO has under its control, could a local municipality apply for some of that to fund the construction of a station, knowing that somebody's going to have to pick up the O&M, whether that be SFRTA or a combination of a local municipality and SFRTA, because that was the other coin they wanted municipalities to foot. I think the number I heard is $500,000 a year in O&M if they wanted a station that badly. And I don't know, that conversation hasn't happened in a few years, But obviously, MPO is not picking up O&M. But can MPO, through any of its various funding sources, look at capital construction for these stations? Again, assuming that somebody's going to buy the land, probably the local municipality, but then the actual vertical. If it is under $2.5 million,
so
then
the answer
could local money go to that? The local, the
yeah, the local initiative money.
Yeah.
The answer is yes, with several caveats. So, MPO federal dollars can be used to acquire right of way and construct infrastructure to support this service extension. That, so that's the MPO's portion of the Surface Transportation Block Grant Program, the SU dollars, the $17 million a year. So if we wanted to set aside portions of that to advance pieces of this system, that's an eligible use of that money. What we envision in the long-range plan, which, trying to figure out how much detail to go into. Let me try to keep it on a high level. What we envisioned was that this was a major project that, based on the revenue forecasted categories we were given, could be built with the money available in years 21 and forward. So to make that a little more specific, we got a forecasted revenue that the department, together with the MPO statewide, decided to call other arterials and transit and said, it's a lump. And there was enough money in that pot that we could pay the full $75 million cost for right-of-way acquisition, station construction, and rail infrastructure in between there, and even maybe purchase of an additional train set to support the service. All of those are eligible infrastructure costs that could be paid from that funding pot, maybe. The caveat is the funding pot is really a combination of multiple fund sources. Some of those fund sources are explicitly eligible for transit investments, and some of them aren't. And we need to kind of work through the details of that with the department work program staff to determine how much of that forecasted revenue could actually be allocated to this project so that we can defray any infrastructure costs, ideally, for the cities. And then you guys just have to pay the O&M.
Unfortunately, as is indicated, there's only going to be two out of those five. West Palm, in the data analysis that was done 3 years ago, because of the proximity to St. Mary's, their ridership was very high. We made that a very likely location. As Dana just mentioned, you have to have pumping truck.
Kim.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Don't have
meat. Yeah, so you kill me.
That's right.
You're
killing me.
I've walked on that.
Only been 5 years, 6 years.
My point being, two stations are pretty much committed because they've got to go. So that means myself in Revere Beach, Lake Park, and Jupiter are going to be in a grudge match. Three go in and only one can come out, unless we can find some other funding source to advance priorities on a more local level. Again, and I understand this was initially done at the very high level, push $100 million in the middle of the table and we'll figure it out later, but we're kind of here at the later, and somebody's going to lose. And the option of, now that we're more at a granular level, if we're talking about $2 to $5 million to impact the community of our scale, is that money out there and where can we potentially find it now that we're in the 5 to 7 year window when this is going to be a reality? Because we know that anything we do in the next year, that's not going to show up for 5 to 7 years, but if we don't talk about it today, we're going to miss the right window for all of the construction that goes on.
And it's a good conversation they're having, and it's great because we want to be talking about how do we move this phase along. Certainly there's criteria and more discussions we need to how we go about funding. O&M is certainly a huge issue for us on the overall tribal coastal link, and especially as we move to add the phases. Keeping in mind that, you know, there could be potential for more stations later on. You know, where do we start? Where do we get in? And then, like I said, there's a specific criteria for how far apart they can be, where the ridership. I'm hearing that you're saying, and I'm not too familiar, I'm hearing that maybe there is some good ridership at some other locations. So those are good conversations to have, and certainly glad that we're talking about it today.
Barbara, could you elaborate on the downtown land use?
Well, currently we've been having a engineering department's been working a lot with the downtown, the Olive Oil Florida folks on the plans for us moving into the downtown. We've aligned up the majority of the funding and the agreements. We're still pending. There still is a gap in funding that is pending some legislative action. And so we're having those conversations. There's still negotiations going on with Olive Oil Florida. We're spending a lot of time in Miami having those conversations. But it is moving forward. So that's the good news for us. And like I said, our engineering department's been highly engaged in that design and what it's going to take for us to go into downtown. And then, like I said, we have a gap in funding, but in the overall scheme of things, it's really not that much when you consider the deal that we're getting. And it would be the same, very similar for the Jupiter extension. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it.
A lot of information. That was very good. Thank you. Next item, US-1 Federal Highway Bridge.
So, Mr. Chair, before I introduce the presenters for this item, I wanted to make a brief remark that all of our presentations this morning and always for the committee are available on the MPO's website following the meeting. So we don't always include the presentation slides in your backup material because they're not finalized when we distribute the backup material and the agenda to you. But in case you're interested in reviewing these further and you'd like to download them for your own personal use, they will be posted to our website later this week. So just wanted to make that announcement. That said, the next item on your agenda, I want to introduce Benita Saini. Please tell me if I said that well.
Yeah, you said it correctly.
All right. She is the DOT project manager for this project development and environmental study for the US 1 Federal Highway Bridge from County Road A1A to Beach Road. And also with her this morning is Paul Cherry and Lisa Stone, both from Kimley Horn, who are here to outline this project. And I have a general question for you before you get too into the details. What is the right name of A1A now that the county has transferred responsibility of that segment to the town of Jupiter?
A1A.
Probably not CR A1A any longer. Because CR indicates county route.
County road.
So you just say A1A?
We say A1A. And I live 2 miles from a bridge that confuses all of us too.
Okay.
But we always say alternate A1A to refer to the other
one. The other one.
So here, alternate A1A, we're pretty much talking about the one that, you know, the 6-lane road that goes around.
Okay. A1A.
Well, thank you. Many of you are familiar faces, some new. My name is Paul Cherry. I've lived in Jupiter for 29 years. I moved there from the Philippines. I built a lot of roads and bridges there. I've done over 20 PD&E studies in South Florida, including Royal Park Bridge and Flagler Memorial Bridge. I worked with Alex on that, a lot of you on that also, known as the Middle Bridge and North Bridge in Palm Beach. What you're going to see is not much future information. You're not going to see the proposed typical sections. You're not going to see some of the challenges that we have. We're just going to mention them. This presentation was designed with the department really to, for our kickoff meetings, to generate questions and comments. One of the things I'd expect you to say is don't forget about the importance of bike lanes in this area, because you're not going to see any right now, although we know the importance. I'm going to turn it over to Lisa Stone. Lisa's also a Jupiter resident, and she's going to go through the presentation, and then we'll answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Paul. Now, the purpose of us coming is we have kicked off this study somewhat recently, and for a PD&E study, we've got to go through the NEPA process. We're working with FHWA to look at various alternatives from an engineering aspect, environmental aspect, social aspect for this transportation improvement. I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with this. Again, this is in Jupiter. This is A1A. I took off the CR, so we'll just call it A1A. But we do start just south of A1A and go north up into Beach Road. This is all town of Jupiter. Got a little bit of the village of Tecosta up here, so we'll be coordinating with the towns. And here's alternate A1A that's over here. Back in the end of 2014, a feasibility study was finalized. The purpose of the feasibility study was a lot of the community and some of came forward and said, you know, we want bike lanes, we want sidewalks on this bridge. So a feasibility study was looked into. However, this bridge is over 50 years old, so after the bridge inspection report was done, it was determined that a PD&E study was necessary in order to replace the bridge. So that's the purpose of our study. There will be a construction job going on this summer that, you know, may cause some of the residents to wonder, oh, is the project starting already? We will tell everyone this is not the actual replacement, but we're going to be jacketing 13 piles in the last 2 months. The PD&E, as I mentioned, will be looking at engineering alternatives. We'll be working with environmental folks that we have on board, and also we'll have various public meetings and working with various stakeholders. The elected appointed officials kickoff meeting is February 17th, 2 weeks from today. So we're going to be holding that at the Jupiter Community Center, and that's going to be from 2:30 to 3:30. We also have a public kickoff meeting following that, same exact format, that's from 5:30 to 7:30. So we're basically going to have an open house. You come in, you look at some aerials, and then we'll have a formal PowerPoint followed by a Q&A. We're also going to be doing an alternatives meeting late summer, early fall this year, and then we'll do a public hearing sometime in 2017. This is the existing bridge as it is today. It's a four-lane divided. Most likely, the new bridge traffic is showing that this will probably be the same, but again, we still have to run through that analysis. So right now, we're doing a lot of data collection. We're doing a safety study. We've got traffic engineers on board looking at all of the future conditions. We're looking at the existing bridge structure, which I'll talk about in a little while, and then the various design alternatives. Now, the bridge inspection report did show that this is a functionally obsolete structure. We've got a 4 rated for the substructure and a 4 for the superstructure. So there's a lot of structural deficiencies as well as the clearance that I'll talk to you about in a second. And then again, as I mentioned, we're going to be doing some of the rehab, the cell for the existing piles.
Lisa, yeah. on the ratings, is 4 like, is it 1 to 4 and 4 is structural?
I believe it's 1 to
5. 1 to 10. Oh. Well, when it goes below 5, it is a critical problem. If it's at 5, it's starting to think about replacement, and it's 4, it's time to start to replace. But it's not dangerous of falling down. And that's why they do some repair work too. I've always tell people that, because when we drive over, and you can drive over.
Don't bring your whole family in to bring your
whole family.
I'm
not going to
show you the pictures. I'm not
going to
show you.
Where is the media?
Coast Guard has specific requirements for the horizontal and vertical clearances. The existing vertical clearance is 25 feet. Coast Guard requires 21 feet, so we're okay there. However, from the horizontal clearance standpoint, we require 125, and we're only at 80 feet, so we'll need to improve that in the design. We'll be looking at various alternatives. Always in a PD&E, we look at the no-build alternative. We're going to be looking at various vertical alignments. We'll look at low bascule, we'll look at a mid-level bascule, and then we'll also look at high fixed. Again, we are going to be working with the town closely and the public to see their desires as well.
Lisa, for those of us unfamiliar with bridge design, what's the vertical clearance for a low level and mid level bascule?
Low is, say, 25 feet.
Similar to what's there?
Mid is 21, exactly.
21 feet is low level. That's okay. What Flagler, that's what Royal Park is.
Okay.
Indian Town Road Bridge is 35. We typically look at 35 feet as a mid level. But okay. We have a unique situation here. We have the Jupiter Bridge here in Indian Town, not far away. If you go under one bridge, you're going over under the other unless you live in a house. So we've already looked at the data, and we've seen that we know pretty carefully, because it's 35, this one's 24. We get about, we know exactly the benefit of raising a bridge, so that'll be taken into consideration.
But a high level can be 65, so that would cause the touchdown to be further.
That's Blue Heron Bridge 65.
In Martin Capital.
We'll also be looking at horizontal clearance, horizontal alignment, so it could keep it in the same place, maintenance of traffic options, there's three different options that we're going to be analyzing. One would be to shut down the existing bridge, route traffic via alternate A1A. We could also do a temporary bridge where we would take, right now we could take two of the lanes that are existing and run traffic on that, build a temporary bridge, and do construction that way, and do phase construction. So we'll be looking at environmental factors, as mentioned. We'll have various reports, noise studies, essential fish habitat, social. We've got the lighthouse out here, so we're going to be working closely with SHPO and cultural resources out there. So it was a lot of fun aspects to this project. Here's the tentative schedule. As mentioned, we've got the kickoff meeting coming up in 2 weeks. And then following that, we'll be working towards developing our various alternatives. The alternatives meeting will be held fall of this year. And the hearing will be early 2017, and then we'll wrap it up in next year. So again, as I mentioned, after our kickoff meeting, we'll be working towards that alternatives meeting and looking at all the various alternatives that I mentioned before. We will, you know, obviously we've met with you. We're going to be meeting with your other subcommittees and the board actually the day after the public kickoff meeting. We've got various stakeholders that we're meeting with as well. As mentioned, the town, the village, a lot of county folks as well. So we'll be available for various presentations. Here's Vanita's information. If maybe you don't remember, I think you've probably seen her here a few times. So. Mm-hmm. And then, as mentioned also, we've got the website up and running. It's got the newsletter for the project up there. We'll have everything from the kickoff meeting that we presented, the PowerPoint. So if anybody comes to you to ask questions, everything's right there. So it really makes it a lot easier. You have any questions?
Are you considering different types of materials for the vascular bridge? We've heard some reports from cyclists who have to bike over vascular bridges so they get clipped in the brakes.
Right.
That's often used, so I'm just wondering if you are considering that in the
future. Well, you know, the existing one's not wrong because they bike in the center of the median, so it's pretty crazy. Yeah, there's two different things. One is that we put concrete in the pathway, including where the bike lane goes. But we're also looking into making, although it's a steel deck, we're also looking into completely filling it so that the entire deck is filled with steel sticking up. We'll take that into consideration.
All right, any other questions?
I had a discussion last week at the statewide MPO Advisory Council regarding the DOT's pursuit of NEPA assignment. That apparently states are permitted to assume the role of federal highway for particular projects in reviewing the environmental analysis and in issuing the local design concept acceptance. And so actually acting as if they were federal highway.
Right.
And I understood that DOT was trying to become that, to have an effective date of that assumption in November of 16. And I know your LDCA is anticipated in early 2017. So I'm curious to know how the in-process projects are going to be handled, if that is actually effective.
Well, I'll let Steve answer that.
We are actually working with St. Paul Office. You're correct. St. Paul Office Environmental is working with FHWA on the application for this NEPA assignment. We're working with them on really giving them a list of active projects. And our intent, and it hasn't been finalized yet, but the District 4's list basically said any projects would be not grandfathered into the federal process. They would be included in the agreement. So we would change really the reviews. If this project, if the new delegation agreement goes into place before LDCA is granted on this project, our recommendation would be that we would process that through the central office approval by DOT versus FHWA. But that's if everything lines up in this example.
So
the only projects which really we don't have any active would be EAs or EIs, higher order classes of action. We still believe those would go through the things. But I've actually got a teleconference this afternoon to pull through. Often, I think it's a misnomer, maybe termed NEPA delegation. But it's actually NEPA signs, as you said, that they're actually assigning the approval authority to the state. There are less than a handful of states that have already been approved. I think I know California is one of them, and I think we're one of three that are actively
in process.
Processing,
yeah.
We're going through that application.
So, Steve, who would be doing the review, the environmental review at the state, assuming that
so,
this process
So, through? Rather, typically on a federal document, we would send it to central office, then they send it to FHWA for signature, for mm-hmm. approval. The approval would actually be at the central office level. They would have the reviewers through DOT, basically.
So, but it would be FDOT review and FDOT to a certain degree,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
it's just not.
Yes.
Sometimes a little bit weird when you're reviewing your own work. I realize it's central versus the.
Right,
the
so part of the application is making sure we have the resources to do that, the checks and balances in place. So it's a big deal to get that assignment. So we're working through all that. This is different to the state environmental process. You often hear SEERs, the State Environmental Impact Reports. Those are actually state documents signed by the district secretary. This would still be essentially the same as a federal document, but the signature is actually the DOT central office.
I would add that this is a pretty complicated bridge. It's like Flagler. Remember, that was determined eligible for listing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of the bridge as like a bald eagle. We got to shoot the bald eagle. We have to get agreement to take the bridge down because it's historic. I mean, the fact that it's falling apart is one thing, but so we have to do a cultural resource committee. If you remember Flagler, we had to do monuments. We did a video. We had a program. This is going to be a pretty intense process to get it removed. It'll take us at least a year to do that. The 65-foot fix, incidentally, does touch down prior to A1A. The problem is the other way. It goes over alternate A1A. The other one goes over, it's just really not practical. But because of the ability to improve boating traffic and vehicular traffic, it's something we have to look into.
Both terminals is Jupiter, though. I don't realize the question goes beyond, but at least you have to deal with two different municipalities at the landing,
right.
Like West Palm and Palm Beach. Or
it actually can touch down here, it can't touch down here.
Cannot.
So the only way you do the 65-foot bridge is to carry it over this and put a bridge underneath there. And take out, if you've ever gone to Jupiter, this area, then you would take a parking on this side over here for all that valuable parking area. That's why we're not showing this to people just yet. That'll be when we do the alternative. We'll bring all this out. Very complicated.
The land acquisition, there's a balance, of course, right, with mobility and land acquisition, environmental impact. So perhaps the scale might be a little unusual in that considering land acquisition costs.
They're getting approvals right now.
I'm not
anticipating any land acquisition. I think the question is going to be the Basco height. I mean, right now it's 24 feet, as was mentioned. We know we can get it up to 35 feet, but then the lighthouse is there. This town has a moratorium on the height that you can go. Fortunately, you guys have been working on the dieting of Tequesta, so we got a more narrow road up there. Good on the four. There's a lot of things we know. But we're really just at this point asking, presenting it the way we're showing it now. The next time we come back, we're going to get a lot of stuff.
Question for you, Paul. In that you referenced, the work on Tequesta, most of the Tequesta portion, which is US 1. The community raised some pretty significant concerns, and I know you're aware of these, but just a reminder. Some very significant concerns, especially about the intersection of A1A, whatever its name is today, right, and Old Dixie Highway, where there's a pretty tricky set of, it's very tricky visibility, and I mean, there may be some relocation needs. We had sketched a few alternatives. I know they're in the hands of the department, happy to assist if we can in that regard.
Okay.
And the other intersection that's related is actually a county intersection, which is Old Dixie Highway and County Line Road. There are these.
Right.
So that's to the north.
Yeah.
There's been a fairly recent fatal accident. Of course, it's a grade crossing as well, which just makes it more difficult. So we have background data.
Okay.
Right? We have plenty of contacts in the community that were developed, and the council would always be happy to sit down and
sure.
assist in any way.
Okay.
2 on great presentations, thank you. Let's see if county staff can make it 3 for 3.
No pressure, Valerie.
An update on the commuter challenge, and I think this is where Valerie is going to pick us all up and take us to work and.
Good morning, my name is Valerie Nielsen, I'm the transit coordinator here at the Palm Beach MPO, and I wanted to provide an update on a commuter challenge that the MPO is organizing with our transportation partners to encourage people that work within or commute to from Palm Beach County to try alternative modes of transportation during the month of March. So this is a website that we set up that has basically you would create a team within, with other people, you can create multiple teams in the place of work, but you would create teams from your place of work, and then you would log during the month of March the commutes that you made by taking alternative modes of transportation, such as transit, biking, walking, carpooling. So this is the website to sign up. We're really excited because we're working with all our transportation providers, partners here in our county. Palm Trans, one of our partners, and we did a bus wrap. This is a picture of it. We actually took our rolling retreat on this the other day, and it was a lot of fun. This bus is going to be running on US 1, the Bolt, so the most popular bus, the highest ridership for Palm Beach County. So that's really exciting. And then we also have Skybike, which is our only bike share program right now in our county, and West Palm Beach is one of our partners. And Transit App is an app, a really user-friendly app to plan your trip within the Miami urbanized area from Palm Beach County all the way to Miami. It connects you, provides you all the connections to use that are available, including bike share, buses, trains, and car to go. Whatever's available in the area that you're looking to go, it'll provide you the connections and plan your trip for you. So Tri-Rail is also our partner. We're doing interior bus or train signs on Tri-Rail and interior signs on Palm Trans as well to promote this challenge and get more people to participate. So the cool thing about the website, it is a friendly competition, but we really want to try and encourage everyone to participate. It's not about winning, it's about let's see what we can do. It's going to track how many pounds of CO2 you save by the time the trips that you made by using alternative modes of transportation. So at the end, we'll be able to have a success story of, hey, this is how many miles the participants bus, train, walk, bike, and we've saved this amount of CO2 overall during the month of March. So we really encourage everyone to sign up, participate, help us spread the word. And here's the website to sign up. Again, the challenge starts March 1st, so it's throughout the whole month of March, which is also Florida Bike Month, so we're planning it in conjunction with that. And hashtag on social media, PB Commuter Challenge. If you see the bus or if you're commuting to work, during the challenge, we want to do a celebration at the end of this challenge. We're looking at working with the city of West Palm Beach to do this, possibly on Clematis Street. So this would be an opportunity to celebrate the top teams, the top commuters. There will be prizes, but also have an opportunity to educate the public and people, passerbys, on the different transportation programs that are available in our county, and also teach them about bike and walk safety. So we're really looking forward to that, but we're still working out the details with the city with that. So we really need everyone's help to help us promote this, to help us spread the word. I'm passing around some postcards, but on the table outside, there's several flyers of different sizes. If you can take one back, put it in your break room or share with you know, business that might be interested in participating, and sign up, create a team, even if it's just you from your organization. You know, every mile counts. So, any questions?
I just have one comment. Mm-hmm. Every month at Palm Tran, for whatever reason, there are a lot of bikes that are left on bus routes, mm-hmm. and so we donate them to County Surplus, which is like a mile north of this business center. Mm-hmm. And so there's a website I can forward to Valerie if anyone's interested. There's all these surplus bikes, some in better working condition than others. So if you need a bike, you can get one relatively affordably. But you have to get out there very, very early. see a bike in your front of you, we're gonna talk about it. But it's really a good way to get a bike.
Do you guys do you partner with any organizations that have, like, for example, people that fix up bikes and then give them to kids that need them?
Yeah, I think about that all the time. Like, it would be really cool if someone bought all these bikes and, you know,
or even
ship them out somewhere.
Track the bike.
I'm your guy. I'm on a board called Club 100 Charities. We take used bicycles, refurbish them, and give them to homeless people or to people that don't have any transportation at all. At Christmas, we did that with 25 bicycles. We're always looking, so give me the website.
It's all run by the county, so let me get your website.
All right.
And with that, maybe when you provide a bike to someone, there could be a pamphlet or a flyer with education on how to behave as a safe cyclist so that people know how to opportunity for that.
They have a hard time getting them to take a shower, so.
not a criteria for bicycle safety. You can ride.
That's a great idea.
We can talk more about that too.
And I want to follow up to the members because Bauer's encouraging you to participate, but I want you to understand that as of the March TAC, we will have a board listing each of the entities here that have signed up and publicly shaming those of you who have not. So we're going to go a little bit beyond just encouragement. We're looking forward to your participation.
And then at the April meeting, they're going to show the results.
That's right.
Actually, I guess.
That's right.
You can consult the partner.
That's right. That's right.
Do you have any resignation forms from the TAC? Do I get credit if I take people to work? Right, Joe. Right?
Yes.
Carpooling is an eligible activity for both for credit.
As long as I don't have to work at it or exercise. Just teasing. Very good presentation. That the peer pressure will work too. Trust me. Anybody have any other questions for Valerie? Great. The summary points are in the agenda for the December 7th Bowling Field Board meeting. There's quite a bit in there. For you to read through, is there anything you want to highlight from the December meeting?
No.
All there to read. Excuse me. All right.
All there for input or any questions.
All right. Are there any comments from the members?
Yes. Nikki had mentioned earlier to let you know about planning scale changes. This is not one for Vero Beach, but Lake Park, since they're not represented, is having their third meeting on the mixed-use community workshop on March 1st. In essence, they're looking to get competitive with North Palm Beach, and they're raising, I think they're going to land at about 16 stories along Broadway and a lot of density in their new sort of an urban quarter that they're creating on Broadway. So, God willing, Riviera Beach will not be too far behind. So I know West Palm, you're up at 20 stories-ish, downtown Broadway. 30, sorry. 30. I was kind of low-balling. It's high. So right now, Riviera Beach is at 6 stories. Lake Park is going to 16, and North Palm's at 20. So you're going to see Broadway. But we do have that. That's one reason we pushed so hard for that Broadway study for mass transit as densities increase over the next decade or so. But they're doing theirs immediately, and I, God willing, will be not too far behind with those sort of transit supporting changes to the complex. So I forwarded you an email with the information from Lake Park's staff.
And just to add to that, if I can, Chair. So so Lake Park is talking about kind of a wedding cake distribution of density, where they'd be at 6 stories max on the west side of Broadway, which is kind of a budding residential, and then up to 10 stories as they start to get near the Lake Park Marina, and then 15 stories at Lake Park Marina. So that would be really the node, if you will, for that increased density, and we step down as it gets to Riviera, where, you know, likely the heights will climb again. And then to the north, the council is working with the village and with the NPO's participation right now on a charrette in the village of North Palm Beach. It's underway now, so if you're into that stuff, we're in the studio in the village chambers. We have been since Sunday. We'll continue to be in the open space. Escondido from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Today, tomorrow, and then Friday, but culminating with a work in progress presentation back to the community Friday at 6 p.m. That's at the Conservatory School in North Palm Beach, which is an elementary school adjacent to Village Hall. Among the main recommendations, in addition to, frankly, some concerns about the increased density, but also a desire to remain competitive, the village, we heard from a majority of folks, a very strong interest in the lane elimination on US 1. Not a surprise, it's the only remaining section of US 1 that's at six lanes. It has a four-lane section through North Lake Boulevard, and then the Parker Bridge, which is at the northern end of that section, is only a four-lane bridge that leads to a four-lane section of US 1 with bike lanes to the north. So why there's all that capacity in that section where there's no destinations is just an inconsistency with a community that's getting younger and wants to bike more and needs better mobility. So likely the recommendation will be a lane elimination. Not a surprise, we're already in dialogue with the department on that. And also a conversation about transit and kind of the multimodal character. You know, there's not a lot of transit service, there's a lot of bikes and peds out there, and that's increasing. So that kind of network improvement is something that we're evaluating. The MPO, the TAC, and MPO will likely see those recommendations back in the form of both planning activities and then ultimately request for funding if the village moves in that direction. Not a surprise, but just a heads up, please, as far as background data.
Or comments from the members. A reminder that this camaraderie continues on March 2nd, so the next meeting will be on March 2nd. We have a motion to adjourn.
Removed.
And a second. And all in favor signify by standing up.